I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo.
A gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into a new episode of The Memo for this Wednesday, April 27th, 2016. Brad Locke here, barely, along with Derek Russell.
You look to be all here.
Physically, I am here, yes.
I'm mentally.
Present. I'm in my fourth cup of coffee.
I don't think you've ever been here mentally. Fourth.
And I started drinking an hour ago.
You're going to need a bathroom break halfway through the show.
Probably.
That'll happen.
Yeah, it will. If you talk, I got to take another
drink.
I'll
take the microphone with you.
You're supposed to talk while I took a drink.
I did.
Dead air is the enemy. That's the number one rule in radio.
And who is the enemy?
Yeah, but I had a late night last night.
You look well rested.
No, I don't.
Your hair is perfectly...
Lauren walked up. Do what?
Your hair is perfectly coiffed.
Your hair is completely gone now.
Yeah. Well, the show's over.
It all fall out? Just kidding.
Nice. Yeah, years ago. Why?
It looks good. Got the shaved, clean look going on.
It's hot outside.
I like it. It is hot. It's supposed to be in the upper 80s this week. It's not. It's still April.
It's in the lower hundreds.
This is why I hate Mississippi weather.
The heat index.
It's the worst.
It's 114 outside.
Yeah.
Speaking of weather, I guess just depending on when anybody's listening to this,
you know,
what time of day you're listening to the show in the future. I know there's a threat of severe weather.
You might
today,
be listening
this afternoon. Yeah. So be careful out there.
Might be listening from your safe place.
Yeah.
Which
know.
You know, if you're waiting on a tornado to come, might as well listen to us.
That'd be a good.
My safe place is Tahiti. Anytime a certain newscaster says that, I feel like that's where I need to go buy a ticket to.
That'd be a good safe place to have.
Yeah. Get to your safe place. Okay, we'll see you guys in a week. Now, the heat is bad, though. I walked out this morning and a bird exploded midair, just burst into flames.
Spontaneous combustion.
I hate when that happens.
Me too.
Got some on your car, too, didn't it?
Yeah, good. Yeah.
One other weather-related note, while we're on it, just talking about the date, of course, today is the five-year anniversary of the Smithville tornado, tomorrow being the two-year anniversary of Tupelo tornado. We tried to get...
It seems to be a good week for tornado, for severe weather.
Yeah, we're supposed to have more today. It's skip this week.
Thank you for pointing that out. That was not subtle enough, apparently.
Just making sure.
Okay. What do you do in severe weather? Where's your safe place, Brad?
The bathtub. Our house really doesn't have a good place.
I just feel very relaxed in here.
That's where we went 2 years ago. They crowded all my wife and kids in the tub.
I was going to say, there's so many of you. Were you not here?
No, I was at home. I guess I was on lunch break because it hit in kind of the middle of the day, didn't it?
It was like 2.
Or maybe I went home because I knew it was coming. My wife was like, hey, I want you to be home. I was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I had to pick up Daniel from...
I don't remember.
From daycare, so because they were going to get out just before they let the schools out for Deanna to pick them up, and then she ended up getting off too. But yeah, we were at the house and then headed out from there. But you guys were pretty close.
Yeah, it nicked our neighborhood. Yeah, and it caused a little bit of damage.
Could you hear it?
That's a strange thing. I mean, you heard all the wind and stuff. I didn't hear that freight train sound.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not directly in its path, but again, like I said, it clipped our neighborhood pretty good.
Yeah, you couldn't have been but a quarter of a mile from it, maybe half mile.
Yeah, we live pretty close to the Joyner
right.
neighborhood. We live over there in the Wildman Acres, and it's just off between North Thomas and Lumpkin. And
close to Bristow Acres, right?
So, yeah, and then, of course, then that takes you into the Joyner neighborhood, and that all got hit pretty good. So, yeah, it went right past us. We got a new roof out of the deal that we didn't have to pay for, so that was a plus. So the anniversary of the Smithville tornado, we have some good coverage in today's journal about that, by the way. I think we've got some more coming tomorrow, don't we?
Yeah, well, they have their anniversary ceremony today,
and
we'll have some coverage of that. And then I know Scott's got a story in a Mars paper for the Tupelo anniversary. I remember the day of the Tupelo tornado, our front page article that day lead story was about the Smithville anniversary, and then it's kind of eerie. They had a documentary on MPB about the Tupelo tornado and all the ones in the state that day, and they showed our front page from that day's paper, and I'm like, oh, there's another tornado coverage. But I'll remember the Smithville being the 5 year today. The magnitude of that. I went out with Thomas Wells maybe about 2-3 hours after it hit. We were there and just kind of seeing the shock and just how that was the first time I had been to Smithville. So I can't compare what it looked like before. I've seen the progress it's made since, but, you know, growing up in New Orleans and not having been around tornadoes a lot before, you know, until that day, I kind of, I mean, certainly had a fear, you know, a fear, healthy respect of tornadoes and not a lot of familiarity with them. But I always kind of thought, you know, they jump around so much that, yeah. you know, your odds are good because it might get, you know, one house and then jump around to the next block or whatever.
Right.
Seeing it take out an entire, you know, I had never seen, yeah, I mean, whatever entire it town. Was, you know, 5 mile, you know, just swathed with nothing at all left in it.
Yeah, yeah, the pictures, man, that, you know, Thomas and the rest of the staff took just really painted a good picture of just how widespread the destruction was.
Yeah.
And, we had a couple of those photos with today's story from 5 years ago. And we've got some pictures that I've seen that I guess we'll use tomorrow of what it looks like now, 5 years mm-hmm. later, or used in some fashion. But anyway, yeah, so check that out.
We're trying to get Ray on today's show. Ray Van Dusen from the Monroe Journal.
Okay, yeah.
He had a meeting this morning, but depending on his schedule, he may or may not be on as the show goes on.
Okay. And on today's show, we'll have Riley Manning talking about the Salvation Army's new facility. They had a groundbreaking earlier this week. Michaela Morris will talk about public health emergency prep. It's not up to snuff here in Mississippi. We've got Jenna Parsons talking food.
Think we got any?
What?
Think we got any?
Think she brought some? Yeah. Doubt it. No, never does.
Odds are not in her favor.
We're going to need to start making a condition here. She can't come on the show anymore unless she brings food.
I think she'd be okay with that.
No,
Brian.
She likes it. First time she came on the podcast, she was like, oh, this is a pain in the butt. But no, she likes it now. She may not admit that, but Jenna loves us.
Yeah. She might bring asparagus, though.
No.
Just to spite you.
If she grills it, I might eat it. Otherwise, no.
Make it again. Just throw it back.
Throw it back in her face. This is all wrong.
No.
Woman.
Call yourself that food lady. All right, let's get started. Riley Manning, join us now. Riley.
Howdy, howdy.
Good morning. Welcome to the memo.
Thank you.
How you doing?
Pretty good. How are y'all?
I'm well. Have you had your coffee?
Not enough of it.
To be in here or just in general?
Oh, I'd rather not.
Why? Why discriminate?
I'm just kidding. No, it's a pleasure. Pleasure to be in the memo room.
We appreciate you
once
having
again.
Here. I apologize. You have to sit across from Brad.
That's all right.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, hello, buddy.
Beard's looking nice.
Thanks, dude.
It's more epic than mine right now. Your beard's looking nice and trimmed, Derek.
I cut mine.
Derek is very bald today.
He sure is. I mentioned that earlier. He just went
like a skate rink.
It's gone. It's fine. It's gone.
It looks good.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't need your approval.
We'll give it anyway, buddy.
Thank you. Riley.
Derek.
The Salvation Army had a groundbreaking.
They
this
sure
week
did.
For their new facility. Tell us about that.
So about a year ago, the Salvation Army said that they wanted to expand on their current lodge, which I think houses around 10 men and around 7 women in like kind of separate dormitories and whatnot. And the original investment they wanted to make was about $1 million. And so they just wanted to expand and, you know, they got their campaign together and whatnot. And, you know, Jack Reed Jr., among others, were like, you know, is this going to give you everything that you need? And the Army said, well, no, it's not going to give you everything. Give us everything we need, but it's going to be, you know, a big improvement. So they went back to the drawing board and said, you know, what would it take to give you everything you need and what would it cost to do that? And so that's where they came up with this current project. It will at least, I think, double the size or like the housing capacity for each gender, and also there's going to be 5 family rooms added, so 4 lodgers with kids and whatnot. It'll give them some privacy, so that's pretty good.
$2.5 million expansion going on. Is this is at their current facility? They're not relocating,
right? This is at the facility on Carnation Street. They're just going to build right there on the property, so it's going to be pretty cool.
And you have in your story that they will be naming the naming rights for the building have gone to a Tupelo citizen.
That's right. Fellow by the name of Jim Ingram, who died in 2006, I think. But he, before there was a Salvation Army in Tupelo, he was in the National Guard and went down to the coast when Hurricane Camille hit and saw the Salvation Army in action and kind of came back to North Mississippi gung-ho about getting a Salvation Army set up here, and that's what he made happen.
So it will be the Jim Ingram facility or lodge, I suppose. Groundbreaking, of course, was Monday. A lot of people involved, as you said, hoping to double nearly the footprint that they have now for lodging for men and women and families.
That's right. Currently, they are at capacity all the time and have been storing people in the gym at night. So, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be excellent. It's a much-needed upgrade from the building that was built back in the 60s, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's been there for a while. So, mm-hmm. Definitely could use some new groundwork there. All right, Riley, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank y'all.
And be sure to check out our two sports podcasts produced here at the Daily Journal. We've got a new episode of Double Coverage coming tomorrow. It's Ole Miss and Mississippi State Sports Talk with Paris Alford and Logan Lowry. You can listen on iTunes, your podcast app, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com. And today, as every Wednesday, a new episode of Prep Rally, High School Sports, with myself and Gene Phelps. Also, you can listen to that on iTunes, your podcast app, or preprally.djournal.com. And now we bring in Michaela Morris.
Here I am.
Hello, Michaela.
Hello, Brad.
Health and medical reporter for the Journal and whatever else we need her to do.
I'm a designated pinch hitter.
You had a story about health security and preparedness.
Yes.
Which sounds exciting, but it's important, obviously. And Mississippi is kind of lacking in that. There was a report, the Robert Wood Johnson mm-hmm. Foundation released its annual assessment, and Mississippi scored a 5.8 out of a possible 10. That's below the national average. It's called the National Health Security Preparedness Index. What does that mean? What are they talking about?
Basically, they look at a whole range of things from our health department's watching for emerging threats? Do they have drills with folks in the community to be ready to respond? Are hospital emergency rooms ready to respond? Are there enough physicians in the state to take care of folks? Are the systems in place so that when you have a hurricane and the wastewater treatment plants are overtopped.
Yeah.
What do you do to get vaccines out to folks so you don't have widespread dysentery?
Right.
And treatments and getting people evaluated, getting them what they need to stay healthy.
Yeah.
They actually look at 134 measures. The good folks at the University of Kentucky put this together for the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
The Wildcat!
So there are things that Mississippi has improved on. Notably, they've got a brand new health lab, which actually opened this year, which wasn't included.
Right.
The health surveillance improved. I'm looking for numbers. And their countermeasures, that's like getting people hazmat suits and respirators.
Right.
And moving a mobile hospital around when there is a disaster. Those things improved. But particularly the healthcare delivery, which the health department actually doesn't have as much direct control over, was kind of the area that Mississippi lost the most ground.
Right.
And the lead researcher, Glenn Mays, his comment was that Mississippi is moving in the right direction, but they and most of the rest of the South are starting from further behind,
right,
in part because there's fewer resources, and they're not improving as quickly as the rest of the country.
Yeah.
If you kind of look at a map of how people were doing, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia are all below the national average. The only Tennessee, Florida, and South Carolina are the only states who were doing average.
In the South.
In the South.
Right, okay.
And then if you look at the map, it's really the Northeast and the upper Midwest, Kentucky, notably, North Carolina, Virginia, that are doing well with with disaster prep. Oregon, Utah.
Yeah.
Those places doing well. But it's especially concerning because the health department is already, you know, you would say vulnerable. They have more work to do than they have funds and resources to carry out.
Right.
And in the last legislative session, their budget was cut, and especially when you take into account the changes in how fees will be handled. They took a 13% cut.
Yeah.
And we haven't heard yet exactly how they're going to solve that problem. But in the last year, we've already had health departments close in places like Benton County.
Yeah.
And other health departments have their hours cut. So I'm very concerned. The folks at the health department work really hard to make these things happen, and they're going to have fewer resources to move forward.
You mentioned the 13.6% budget cut for the health department. Then earlier mentioned that the new health lab, $36 million public health lab, neither of those was included in this report because of the recent developments.
Yeah, those are the public health lab opened
January.
Yeah. And it allows them to work safely with highly infectious substances. Like right now, they are already doing testing for Zika,
yeah.
The mosquito-borne virus that people are so concerned about from primarily South and Central America right now that has been linked to a birth defect. They're doing, you know, they've got a lot going on. They've increased their capacity, but at the same time, they've taken a very significant funding cut.
And you've got the measles up around Memphis now,
yeah,
apparently.
They're very concerned about that. That's something they're watching for. Fortunately, in Mississippi, we have excellent vaccination rates because the laws are so strict for public school and daycare attendance. So hopefully if we see some measles cases in Mississippi, it won't go far. But kids and adults, I mean, cancer patients are at risk because they of their compromised immune systems. If you've got somebody in your family who is under 15 months or somebody who's in chemotherapy or an elderly relative, I wouldn't necessarily go look in the sidewalks in Memphis.
Well, that rules out my plans for the weekend. just don't go to Memphis anyway. So basically what I gathered from this story is if the zombie apocalypse happens, we're screwed in Mississippi.
Well, maybe more to the point, we won't weather it as well.
Now Derek's turned. What?
We won't weather it as well as, say, our friends in the Northeast.
Right.
Perhaps.
That's true for most things with Mississippians.
With any of these national indexes, you also are they. What are they measuring, and how much are they measuring poverty? And that's true when you're looking at health statistics, whether you're looking at how schools do, that you've got some of this is Mississippi is just not going to have the toys that other people have.
Yeah, yeah. Good story. Again, you can find it in yesterday's journal and djournal.com. Michaela, always a pleasure. Thanks.
Always a good time.
Be sure to watch the Daily Journal's Capital View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capital Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on the issues being debated by Mississippi lawmakers. You can watch live each Monday at 2 p.m. or catch the replay later in the day. Now, the current legislative session is over, but we're still going to have a show every Monday around 2 o'clock at djournal.com. Check it out.
I'll be trading cooking recipes coming up on...
Anything to fill the time,
yes.
Derek. Yes. All right. Let's do today's news memo. And for more on these stories, read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. Mississippi's graduation rate improved significantly from 2011 to 2014 and moved closer to the national average. The state released data on Tuesday for the class of 2014. Those students showed a 78.4% graduation rate, up from 74.5% a year earlier. The national graduation rate was 82%. Mississippi's four-year dropout rate was 12.8%. It was 13.9% the previous year.
First and second grade students in the Lee County School District will have the opportunity to participate in the Little Ripples swimming program. Students from those schools will each come to the Tupelo Aquatic Center for 1 week for swim lessons. Second graders will participate in the fall and first graders will come in the spring. District and city leaders gathered at the Aquatic Center on Tuesday to announce the new partnership. Students in the Tupelo School District have been in the program for several years.
After 21 months of an empty pulpit, Tupelo's First Baptist Church will welcome a new pastor. The Reverend Matt Powell was named the church's senior pastor. The 32-year-old is currently at East Haven Baptist Church in Brookhaven. He has served as a senior pastor at East Haven for the past 5 years. Powell will preach his first sermon as senior pastor at First Baptist on May 15th.
The two-year anniversary of Tupelo's April 28th tornado will be a celebration of the positive things that have developed in the storm's wake. The public is invited to gather behind the Tupelo Parks and Recreation Department's offices in Ballard Park at 10:30 a.m. on Thursday for the unveiling of sculptures commissioned for the Arts to Heal project. Tupelo native Tanner Coleman created three brick sculptures that kids can play on while they visit the park. One is a sun with a funnel cloud, and the other two are butterflies that symbolize regeneration. Afterward, attendees are invited to visit the Orrin Dunn City Museum to view a collection of Pat Caldwell's photographs of the tornado.
Visitors to Bryce's Crossroads on Saturday will step into a time machine set back 150 years. Reenactors will show visitors how the armies lived during the Civil War and how everyday people survived. The Living History Day will feature 20 camps showing things like a kitchen, bathhouse, mortuary, and a school. There also will be 10 military camps with cannon firing, artillery, cavalry, and infantry demonstrations. The event will be held from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. on Saturday. Admission is $5 per person with a $20 maximum for families.
And don't forget, come see Taste of Home chef Jamie Dunn share her home cooking tips and tricks while demonstrating step-by-step recipes for the season's best dishes. And get a gift bag filled with the Taste of Home Cooking School magazine, coupons, and other items from national and local sponsors. The Taste of Home event, Brad, is going to be held Tuesday, May 17th at the Bancorp South Conference Center. Doors are going to open at 4 p.m. The show begins at 6. This is Tupelo's first cooking school in more than 10 years. There will be high-value door prizes. You listening to me, Brad? High value door prizes.
Nice.
Like a cat.
A cat?
You cook with it.
I don't want
to. No, there will be no cats there. I'm just kidding. But there will be bar stools from Stash Furniture and a major appliance from Home Depot and many, many more. Tickets are going to be $12 in advance, $15 at the door. You can purchase them online, djournal.com/taste. Hey, Jenna Parsons. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Just seeing you makes me hungry.
That would be because I did not bring food.
That is exactly the case. But that's okay because you're going to tell us about your food section today.
I am. What do you want to know?
Jenna, you had a cook of the week, a pastor's wife. Tell us about her.
Cindy Henry.
Mm-hmm.
She is 2 years younger than me, and she looks like she's about 12. She's tiny.
Years old or younger than you?
12 years old.
Okay.
She is tiny and she is precious.
Mm-hmm.
And she loves that church, Auburn Baptist Church, where she and her husband have been for 7 years. They were actually in Tupelo for 7 years at West Jackson Street Baptist Church. And then he felt called to a church in Macon, Georgia, I believe. And they spent about 5 years there. And then they came back. And she cooks for, in addition to organizing the Wednesday night suppers at the church, she has two teenage boys that she has to keep fed. So
which is a hard feat to do.
It is. But they like to hunt and they like to fish. So if they kill it, she cooks it.
That's a
she good... said, we don't kill for sport. So anything they bring home, she has to
So they
prepare.
Shot this strawberry trifle out in the wild and well, dragged it home. It's a beautiful arrangement.
I wasn't speaking of desserts.
Oh, okay. Yes. I'm sorry.
I don't know that you can hunt and fish for dessert.
They're crafty things.
I guess you could hunt for strawberries, wild strawberries, but I believe these came from the grocery store.
Auburn. I'm assuming that's the Auburn community.
It is. And she, about 5 or 6 years ago, a member of the congregation there felt led to start providing Wednesday night meals for shut-ins. And so different Sunday school groups took turns coming up with the menu and preparing the food and delivering it to the different shut-ins in the congregation. And then they said, well, shoot, why can't we do it for the whole congregation? So now they cook on Wednesday nights for families in the church, and it's really a nominal fee. And the menu, I don't remember, but it was like roast beef and stuffed potatoes, and I mean, just all kind of yummy things that they fix on Wednesday nights.
She's not the one that one of the sons nominated her, is she, that you were telling me about?
No.
Okay. You were telling me one the other day that a son nominated, and I was wondering if it
was... The cook that's going to be featured, that I actually am interviewing today, tomorrow for next Wednesday, Missy Hudspeth, her son nominated her.
Oh, okay.
No, it was a fellow parishioner who nominated Cindy.
I got you. All right, then. And your column today was about cookbooks, church cookbooks.
It's about a church...
A specific one.
A church cookbook, because I mentioned that all the time when I go and interview cooks of the week or just anybody that's food-related, they always talk about how they like to get recipes out of church cookbooks because, you know, those ladies at church really know how to cook, and any of you who've been to a potluck or a dinner on the grounds know where of these folks speak.
I think the Harrisburg cookbook has at least three of my grandmother's recipes.
Oh, really? Yeah. I have that cookbook.
Well, she's so, in there.
So this publishing company that's out of Lena, Mississippi, and it's called Great American Publishers, just went to different churches in the state and got recipes from folks. And in the cookbook, there are little write-ups about the different churches that are featured. There are several from Northeast Mississippi. Auburn Baptist Church, actually, I believe, is one of them. And so they're just, it's typical, divided into appetizers and main meals.
But how to track and hunt desserts.
But there's also, like, the ABCs of salvation. And then it talks about why you should go to church, just general reasons of why you should go to church. So there's a little God thrown in there, along with the chicken
probably
and dumplings.
Probably for the potlucks.
just go for the food.
Yeah, apparently. $21.95 available online.
Online. I looked. It's available at Barnes & Noble. It's an Amazon. I don't know if it's like in, you know, Walmart or local bookstores, but you can find it online if you can't find it in a local bookstore.
Just as we've said many times before, I'm not a cook nor chef and do not know much about food. What are Texas millionaires?
Oil men?
Shut up, Brad.
I believe it's that it's a candy that's like chocolate and caramel and nuts.
Never heard of such.
Have you never had millionaires like bought in the Whitman box or whatever?
No.
You're missing a treat. Some people call them turtles.
I don't do sweets much. I know that's hard to believe looking at me, but...
I don't do sweets much either.
I don't do sweets way too much. Partake of sweets too much. That's why your hair does that. That's not product. It just stands up on end by itself.
It's good for my hair. Chocolate's good for my hair. I can go with that.
The recipe you pulled, I guess, from the book. Is this...
Yes, it's a chicken and spinach quiche.
I haven't had a good quiche in ages.
You know, we make it a lot for breakfast, but we also do it in the evening at dinner, and you can do it with the salad and fruit, or it's also really good if you make a side of cheese grits.
Cheese grits. Now I'm extra hungry.
I had some cheese grits at South on Sunday for lunch, and they were excellent. I don't know how we got off on that. I guess because you said cheese grits.
I was trying to remember the best cheese grits I had. It was four cheese grits, and I believe that it was at Park Heights, but I may be mistaken there. But anything that's got four cheeses in it, I'm there.
The best shrimp and grits I have ever had was at Bouray in Oxford, and I had to drink about 18 pitchers of water afterwards because it was so spicy. Spicy means makes your mouth on fire.
Oh yeah,
mouth and, on fire. It was good, but it was.
The first shrimp and grits I ever had was at City Grocery in Oxford, and then Charlie and I had it when we went to Charleston one time at a restaurant that's slightly north of Broad Street. So the name of the restaurant is slightly north of Broad or Snob. And we had it there for lunch one day. It was really reasonable, like $7. And it was, we just thought we had died and gone to heaven. It was actually better than City Groceries. And so, but we didn't know how to duplicate it. And then one day in Bon Appetit, someone had written in and said, oh, I had the best shrimp and grits at a place in Charleston called Snob. I'd love to have the recipe. And they supplied it. And so now we make that shrimp and grits about once a year, always for special occasions.
So I'll be over around 6.
One year we did it for Super Bowl.
I mean, I feel like me coming over for dinner is a special occasion. But
that would be a special
Charlie's
occasion.
Charlie's going to be gone for a few days. Just cook for me.
People would talk.
I'll come over too.
I'll bring Brad.
Oh, then people would really talk.
Bring our wives. There we go.
I'll bring
us all over.
Bring my kids. Dog. I don't know. We'll podcast from there.
Party at the Parsons Langford house while the husband's away. Tell Jenna, your friends.
Jenna, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Is that the show? Are we done?
That's it, Brad. Okay. It's all over.
I'm still trying to wake up.
While you nodded off there, we already wrapped up. Actually,
is my mic on?
It's Thursday. We've come back and started.
What? I fell asleep.
The next one. Tell them where they can find us, Brad.
They can find us at DJournalMemo on Twitter. You can listen a variety of ways, iTunes, your podcast app, or at memo.djournal.com. You can send us an email with your comments, suggestions, recipes, whatever. Memo at
Fritz Virginia not to make us.
Yes, memo@journalinc.com.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on Twitter at Bradlock.
Mm-hmm.
You, Derek, you're on the Twitter.
At Bradlock.
No, you're not.
What?
No, that's not right.
Is it not at Bradlock?
Not for you.
I changed it this morning. I'm pretty sure it's possible. Bradlock.
Check my Twitter.
I have two E's. Yeah.
Two E's.
Bradlock E.
I used to have, Twitter. There used to be a parody account of me at not Bradlock.
Really?
Back when I was covering MSU. Yeah.
It'd be kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
It's at not Rod Rojardo.
Right Rod Rojardo dropping off our paycheck stubs. And we get paid today.
Hey. Well, yours is pink.
What? What's that pink?
So was this parody, like, was it funny? Was it any good? Or was
it was somewhat
it
was anti, funny. Do you ever know it who was, did
he,
it?
Did he have
a mustache?
No, I knew who it was. He was a Facebook friend I deduced. I figured it out. But it was, yeah, it was, he liked me.
Is
so.
It still there?
So it was in good humor. It wasn't like
Yeah, it was just humor. See, I think it's been gone for a while because he was a State fan.
Well, as of today, it's back.
What?
I'll be creating that account in a few minutes.
Oh, okay. You do that, Derek. You do that.
At not Van Bellinger.
Things Van Bellinger said.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Van Bellinger.
Oh, God.
Who do you belong to, doggy?
Chris is on Twitter.
At Chris Lock Kiefer. McLockface.
Lucky Lockman.
That is my current handle, the display name, whatever you call it. Locky McLockface. Quit hitting me with the paper.
That's what it's good for, reading and assaulting.
Yeah.
And we'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode.
Sure will.
Featuring explosions, dancing, a huge musical number.
And what?
We can't back all that up, but probably a couple of interviews at least.
Oh, okay, yeah.
All right. So we will see you tomorrow.